So that's how if we win get the sectors that are operating here in our city. With regard to project in other areas, Chatterson, I must tell you, Chatterson, that we've got a huge program that we have engaged in it. It's called the Rural Roads Program. Those are the roads that are in our rural areas, we're doing them. Those land roads, we're maintaining them, covering and stuff like that. But we're not going to finish that thing in the near future because Chairperson, there are a lot of villages in our municipality that need to be attended to, including townships. In Mdantsane, we've got a lot of activity there in the roads of Mdantsane. If you can go there, you will always find in almost every unit, there is a construction of roads that is taking place as we speak. But we did not include this in our presentation, but they are there. The Gomza Highway that I was talking about is that big road that is in Mdantsane, starting from N1 up to it's supposed to go to Sasol Garage, but we're unable to proceed because the Department of Transport took the money away from us when we were on time and we're about to finish that route. So that's why we're struggling in terms of getting funds to proceed with that route, because it was meant for buses that were going to be done in a public transport system for Buffalo City. So we are working on those matters. I think we've even taken the matter up to the necessary portfolio committee. So we're going to be called. I think the thing of COVID-19 derailed that progress that we're making at that level. In terms of awareness to communities, the mayor every November, December, January, we do mayoral visits to go to each and every community, region by region, to take needs of the people, also inform them about opportunities that are available. I'm talking about the issue of SMMEs that are located in rural areas. We still also have SMME incubators, Honorable Chair, that are established by the municipality to train SMMEs to prepare them for work, to ensure that they're able to do business plans and so on and so on. That thing is run by our economic development department. Some of them, where we can, we give them startup funding for those things that we think are going to be helpful. So that information is readily available. It's also in the website of the municipality. I think that Chairperson, also in Israelisha, we've got a huge water wells plant there that we've constructed in Israelisha, which is going to feed Bisho and other surrounding the rural townships and rural areas there. So this thing of focusing on London is not an issue that is driven by us, but by sometimes by developers who want to develop in East London. In our PEP, Built Environment Plan, we've got projects and catalytic programs that are what we're pushing in all these areas. Also in Pingulamstown, around Victoria stadium. There is a proposal. I'm sure the CFO, I mean the CEO of Buffalo City Development Agency is going to talk about that is going to be there in Victoria Stadium. The CEO will deal with that. That is in King Williamstown. We try to move in all the areas. For example, now in Berlin, we are going to do the a fire station. Also, the East London IDZ, we have donated land to them that is located in Berlin. So, with them moving, they are going to occupy that land. There will be economic activity there, and so on and so on. So, whilst we wanted to ensure that we scratch the totality of Buffalo City, at the same time, some of other preferences for East London are for these developers choosing to be the site. There is no intention on the part of Buffalo City to locate or allocate the developments only in East London. I think, Chairperson, we appreciate the comments by members of the committee, especially if they could help us with the issue of ensuring that the East London port is widened and deepened so that bigger vessels can land dock there. Thank you very much. I think I've captured all the issues that were raised from my side. Thank you.
Chair, we could come in. We could come in, Chair, with some of the...
Is that ECDC?
Yes, Chair. We got kicked out. I think with our load shedding challenges, it's been a little bit unstable, but we're back, Chair.
Can we just allow a BC MTA, because it's going to flow, because it's an entity of Buffalo City Municipality. So you can allow a CEO Bulumko. Yes. Over to you. Maybe you can also touch on the issue of this Hall of Fame CEO Bulumko.
Yes,
Nela.
We'll do that. Yeah, thanks.
And, I think the city manager also touched on Victoria Stadium. If you can also elaborate on that. Because I always drive past it. I'm not happy with the the outside.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, Chair, thanks. Thanks for the questions from the members of the committee. I think they are quite insightful as far as the work we are doing in the city. I would want to start by saying that the city manager's presentation does touch on the issue of energy mix. He referred to a renewable energy project that the city is trying to sponsor or is sponsoring that's meant to complement Eskom's supply of energy. And so that should perhaps be one of many that should come on stream to ensure that there's energy security in the city, if indeed all these developments are going to be successful. So we take that, and I think we understand that is a huge risk as well. Now, going further, there is already a work we are doing with DBSA, on infrastructure, bulk infrastructure planning for the various developments, and the funding model they are looking at for the various projects I presented. In addition to this, the city manager's office, as is reflected, is driving the process of coordination and making sure that the decisions that are required from the city side to enable the implementation of all these developments are taken as speedily as possible. So that would touch things like transport impact assessments, for instance, and so on. an advice from engineering on what would work where and how. So all of that, we are seeing it coming through nicely for the work we're doing. As far as youth access is concerned, yes, as part of the conditions for our leasing of the land, we have required all developers to table as part of their bids their enterprise development strategy, with the priorities of being given to designated groups, and making sure that localization is a significant part of that. And so we will monitor that as the agency and report regularly on the breakdown of the beneficiaries of the developments, both during construction and property management later on, as well as equity participation. So we are monitoring all of those things. Then on the, I take the point about the participation of women. We try by all means to balance almost on a 50-50 basis the participation of men and women in the developments we do and the projects we implement. But I think for more detail, we can obviously finish the committee with some breakdowns in terms of how we're looking right now and where we can improve and so on. Then on the geographic spread of the work, I want to start by saying, Chair, we are quite conscious of the need not to be biased to the coastal region. To this extent, I think one of the leading projects in the work we're doing, which I must apologize, I didn't mention here because we're getting into the negotiations phase for it. It's the project of the redevelopment of Victoria Grounds. And that should see at this stage, give or take, about 350 million being invested in that area, and in excess of 100 permanent jobs being created by that. The city obviously does allocate land parcels from time to time, and the main thing was that this was the first set that was allocated to the agency, which the agency has shown that it can move with the development of the land parcels in partnership with the private sector. Despite all the challenges and delays and what COVID did in terms of stalling us and so on, we are steadily regaining momentum and so on. So I'm sure we will have more of these developments inland as well. We are, however, doing for rural development purposes, we are doing some work with CSIR in Shushubi village for developing an agri park or an agri business that is anchored on the land of the community there. So we're working with the Department of Land Affairs and Rural Development as well in the process. That is also something we can, obviously, when we come back next time, we probably would have made some strides. At this stage, we are at land assembly stage. Once land assembly is done, we will then be able to fence the land and start introducing farming equipment and so on. Then on townships, yes, you are right. There is a program we're having here called heritage tourism as the starting point of our entry into the township economy. So the first route we have identified was the Dangen village route, but there are other routes that have been identified. There are about six of them. There's the Danzane route. There is a route in Zwelitsha, Ginsberg, Bisho. There is a route in Berlin, Dabozuko. There's a route in Dimbaza. And then there's a route in the inner city, because there are certain historic sites that are also located in the inner city. So there's about 6 routes in total that we are going to be developing. However, we've started packaging the first one, which was Dangin Village. And then we are looking now at partners for packaging the other five and making sure that they are commercialized equally. So the Hall of Fame, dilapidated as it might be at this stage in Dimbaza, Hall of Fame in Dimbaza, will be part of the Dimbaza route. And we see the Dimbaza route, Chair, mainly as a gateway into the wars of Ofrandia wars corridor from Dimbaza all the way up to Fort Beaufort, and from Fort Beaufort going all the way to Makanda. We see all of that as a frontier wars region. We also are in the process of looking at a route linking McLintown and Mahoney villages, especially because the gravesite of the king, or of the Xhosa king Dlambe, is located there. And it's also a route that we will package to exploit rural tourism and heritage. So we are doing this, but obviously with limitations of resources, we can't do everything at the same time. So we have to stagger them and gradually move carefully on the basis of the available resources. So that's where we are, Chair, as far as spreading the work we're doing across the city. And we are looking forward to reporting in future further developments that integrate the city and make sure that the development of the city is seamless across the coastal and inland regions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, CEO Bulungo Nila. Thank you very much for the responses to the questions of honorable members. Honorable members will have an opportunity to make follow-up questions. But in the meantime, we'll then go back to ECDC to respond to the questions directed at them. ECDC?
Chairperson, thank you once again. We have received a question about the non-core assets of the ECDC. We have an asset portfolio of approximately 1.3 billion. A significant component of it is residential infrastructure, but the mix is residential, commercial, and industrial infrastructure. We've defined as non-core the residential portfolio, including vacant land less than 2,000 square meters. We're releasing this non-core portfolio in order to secure resources to upgrade our commercial and industrial properties. We've invited partnerships with the private sector for commercial ventures relating to the commercial properties. And as indicated earlier, we're investing in upgrading the industrial centers through the funding that we're securing from the DTI. I think about 46% of these properties are around Mthatha area, about 35% in the Butterworth area, and around 17% in the Buffalo City and the Queenstown area. So the process of releasing the non-core asset is underway to secure resources to invest on commercial and industrial. The objective being to use commercial and industrial to support our SMME empowerment initiative. The other question related to support in tourism. The work in the tourism industry is primarily led by the Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism Board. We are, however, dovetailing their efforts focusing on commercialization interventions, you know, relating to tourism enterprises. So, but they are playing the lead, and we're supporting their efforts in this regard. A question was raised regarding infrastructure, the role that we play within the, you know, planning space. And we're part of the provincial structures that deal with infrastructure planning, but more pointedly, we play a role as an implementing agent in the actual implementation of infrastructure. We act as an implementing agent for social infrastructure, such as schools, on behalf of the Department of either Education or Health, for health facilities. But we also play as an implementing agent for the Department of Economic Development regarding economic infrastructure. In fact, we act as the program management office for the department in this area. Later on, when I make reference to the Dimbaza Industrial Center, I will link our intervention with this role that we play. We also have partnerships in place with DBSA, with CIFA, with CEDA, and we also work with the Department of Small Business Development on a number of initiatives. We also got partnerships with provincial-based agencies such as the ECRDA. So most of the development efforts that we employ are with those partners, where we come with a focus on commercialization or stimulation of an economic activity in a specific sector or value chain. With regard to Dimbaza in particular, this initiative, as the chair had observed, started a while ago, funded largely by the Department of Trade and Investment, the National Department, IC, and it has three phases. The first phase of the project looked at construction of access roads, as well as rehabilitation of bulk services, including stormwater drainage in the center, as well as fencing. I think that phase is substantially complete. The second phase is the high mast and street light installation. This phase is about to commence. In fact, about a week ago, we had concluded the appointment of a contractor to initiate this phase. The third phase would deal with the wastewater treatment, plant upgrade, and that phase has not commenced. We are accessing funding in this program on a piecemeal basis, and therefore for the current financial year, I think we were able to proceed to the high mast and streetlight project. Dovetailing our infrastructure upgrade efforts is the work that is done by our trade and investment promotion, who are working on lining up investors that will take up the space. We are upgrading the units within the center as we secure investment. There are a few new entrants into the center, effective from last year, 2020. Unfortunately, the project is resource-driven, and therefore the resources present themselves as a constraint in terms of the speed within which we can move the project. We also are working on reviewing the master plan. We believe that some of the propositions entailed in the master plan may not be appropriate for the center. We think that we would want to bring developments that are organic to economic activity in the area, to manufacture or localize commodities that are commonly used around the area. So we're working on that. So work is happening. We take note, though, of your expressed concern that the pace may not be as speedy as we would wish to see it. In fact, we have a board coming very soon, and we will be tabling a comprehensive report to the board about the progress done in this regard. We certainly can share the report we've put for that purpose with yourselves, which will at least empower you even as you engage with local stakeholders about what is it that is coming and what is it that has been attained with regard to that project. My colleague, Upaki, will take more questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question about the Exporter Development Program. The Exporter Development Program is a capacitation program that ECDC does in partnership with the private sector, in particular, Boracay Chamber of Commerce, as well as Nelson Mandela Chamber of Commerce. The mentors into the program are members of Exporters Eastern Cape, who are, through the years, have been awarded as the top 20 exporters, within the top 20 exporters. So these mentors make time, set aside time to mentor the participant into the exporter development program. Mentorship is not only to talk about what makes them successful exporters, but include taking participants to their factories, showing them the process of the production for export that makes them successful. There is some incentive that we provide to the mentors just for the time that they spend on mentoring the participant. So what we do is a company that does production in food production, for an example, in doing tomato paste, processing of FMCG products, is then linked to a mentor who's in the similar field so that there is an ease of understanding of business. What culminates to, from this 12-month initiative is a comprehensive marketing plan that is now developed by each participant. And beyond that, each participant implement that implementation plan and in consultation with their individual mentors who from time to time consult with them, mentor them virtually or physically, depending on the location of both the company, the participant, and the mentor. With respect to assistance in market access, creative industry market access is through the Eastern Cape Crab Collection Shop, which is an investment of the provincial government to create a platform for all enterprises, mainly from rural areas, whose products are marketed directly into the mainstream of the domestic market and international market. We are now working on an online platform portal where we'll be able to allow clients in Europe, Brazil, China to order online and have this product delivered to their respective countries because we've already created a brand that is recognized. But other products, we gave them market access through exhibitions. We have been now to Karma's Kamar Makers is one of the most significant exhibition in South Africa that has got an international outlook. The first round was in Tshwane, Pretoria. Sales are generated there. And the second one, which was two weeks ago, was in Stellenbosch. What is important is not only the sales that they generate during exhibition, but the contact that are received by these enterprises wherever they are through the exhibitions. Because when you order, we don't carry significant amount of stock at the shop, but the shop is just a platform to expose products of the creative enterprises in the Eastern Cape. The details of where you order, for instance, there were baskets that were weaved from Port St. John's. The demand was so much that we would not have space at our shop at Beaconbury Crossing, but to provide the contact details of the producers of the baskets, so that the market can link direct with them. Yeah. So The other access is through these trade missions, where we take a group of companies and introduce them to markets where we take them and organize business to business sessions where negotiations are done between companies and the market.
Sorry, Honorable Gango, can you please mute your mic? Honorable Gango?
I have muted the mic, Chair.
Oh, all right. Thank you. You can continue, ECDC. I don't know if you can.
Yeah. Okay. I'm almost done. So one of the market access platforms that we've created since 2019 is the annual Eastern Cape Export Symposium and Exhibition. That's a huge platform that has gained popularity throughout the various regions of the world, where we not only provide information on new market opportunities to our companies, but provide exhibitions where exhibition space where our companies are able to put their product on the market. And a lot of these companies were able to access markets. For instance, the companies in the footwear and leather industry were able to get the attention of buyers in Rwanda, where we're seen and conducted through that facility. We don't only provide during the Eastern Cape Export Symposium and exhibition space, but we do business-to-business sessions where a buyer is interested to get more details from a particular supplier in the Eastern Cape. We provide that session and we facilitate that session so that out of that session, we are able at least to have an expression of interest to buy and follow that up until there is a conclusion of an export deal between our companies and the market that we serve. Also, what we do is that we've started now, there's a new unit that is being established called Economic Development within the ECDC. With the companies that we attract to invest in the Eastern Cape, they create a demand, for instance, the one on livestock and meat production to the Middle East has now created a demand of more than 30,000 tons of feed. We're working now with the Red Hub in Kanduli through ECRDA as well as Mount Elif to get more companies to produce the inputs into the feed manufacturing process, which is the grain such as lucerne, such as maize, which are going to be produced by farmers in the various regions and consolidated into storage facilities in Mkanduli as well as Mount Elif, pre-processed, and the mesh then will be, as the latest negotiation with Transnet, railed to East London through commitment that Transnet has made to resuscitate the branch lines, especially the one from Mthatha to East London, that is intended to bring in inputs from Mthatha as well as the one from Maclear to East London. The main line, we're so fortunate that the main line from Northern Cape has now been complete, and hence we know that the manganese deal now is almost going to take off, because it's the main line goes up to Uka House and then Uka and then Blangy to East London. So you are able to transport manganese, though the phase one manganese is going to be tracked from the Northern Cape to East London. But the medium to longer term plan is to have manganese on rail from the Northern Cape, because there are two other products, zinc and iron ore. We don't want those to be on the road, but on rail lines. But that is achieved through collaboration with our partners and platforms such as Invest Buffalo City, that works with all entities to provide support to the investment initiative in the Buffalo City metro area. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for the response. At this stage, I would like to check if honourable members have follow-up questions on the three presentations.
can I raise answer a question that I forgot to answer?
Yes.
There was a question from Honorable around an issue that I was raising, that it's a perception from our side that a national and a provincial leadership, when they talk about the Eastern Cape, they only mention Nelson Mandela Bay as a manufacturing and automotive hub of the Eastern Cape. And we're saying this thing is disadvantaging us because we regard ourselves also as a manufacturing and automotive hub. And we think that the narrative about a single one district or municipality does not represent the facts of what is actually happening. So I think what we're raising, we're saying, even in the NDP has identified Buffalo City as a manufacturing and automotive hub. We're just asking the national leadership, at least when they present the thing, they present it as contained in the NDP document. That's what I was saying. The narrative need to change from single into a two, into a clear narrative of two hubs that are here in the Eastern Cape. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, City Manager. I see there's ICT's iPad. I don't know who that is. Okay, you can go ahead and must be indicate your name.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Phumelele Ndamase.
Oh, okay.
I want to apologize. I don't know what happened with the communication because I've just joined the meeting at 10 to 1, at 12:50. Because until yesterday, I was informed that the meeting starts at 16 hours today. And that has put me at a bad disadvantage in terms of understanding the proceedings and participating fruitfully in the meeting. But yeah. But I have one or two things to raise. And if you agree, Chair, I may be raising things that were raised. I may be raising things that are not part of the content of the debates.
You can go ahead, Honorable Damas.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know whether both ECDC has presented. And
yes, they have.
They have.
Yes.
Can I raise issues perhaps that pertain to both the development agency as well as ECDC?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, from the oversight function of the portfolio committee on economic development, we are making observations, and observations in relation to the transformation agenda that is supposedly must be supported by the DFIs, and I'm looking at ECDC and the role of ECDC in terms of venturing into new opportunities where they do not only look at a situation where they will be able to recoup their money. I'm saying what I'm saying, fully aware of the state at which ECDC is, and at some point we're fighting with the MEC about the performance of ECDC, which we thought it was on the verge of collapse in 2020. And again, if you look at the industrialization in the province, we have issues. We have issues, and as we are looking at the annual reports now, one of the issues is there is a policy document that was produced by the department in 2010. And that document is called Provincial industrial development plan, if I'm not mistaken, but its central point is on the industrialization in the Eastern Cape. And then 2014, the planning commission in the province produced Vision 2030. And currently, there is a document produced in 2017 in relation to the economic transformation, if you say, or the economic development. I'm not sure, Chair Noba, can you still hear me?
Chair? Yes, loud and clear. We can hear you loud and clear.
I'm just winding up with the point that says, I am not sure, Chair, whether the department is here, the Department of Economic Development in the Eastern Cape. We are still going to meet them as the department, looking at the annual report. But if the department is here, can they please, together with the entities, and those entities are including ECTC, can they be able to have a cut out strategy in terms of dealing with the industrialization in the Eastern Cape, so that we know that if they have abandoned that document of 2010 on industrial development in the province, let us know and be able to understand. But if that is part of what they were saying in 2010 and what they were saying in 2014 and what they were saying in 2017, let us be able to understand if really whatever we're saying in that policy formulation, we still think it is feasible now that we're in 2021. Because if you say Vision 2030, it means we're 9 years away from the achievement and from the year that has been targeted from the point of view of the department. Finally, it's also to stress a point for ECDC to say, are you ready, for instance, to engage in innovations that you are not sure of recouping what you have invested as far as industrialization is concerned in the Eastern Cape? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndamaso. Honorable members, Honorable Ndamaso is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development in the Eastern Cape. So we decided that on this meeting, we'll also invite the chairpersons of a portfolio committee. We'll do the same when we meet with the Free State. On the issue of starting time, Honorable Ndamaso, initially we're going to start at 4 because we usually have our plenary session starting at 10. They continue sometimes until 4. We would have our meetings starting at 4 to accommodate the plenary sessions. But then there were the program of the of Parliament was revised, and it was communicated to us that this week, the whole of this week will be only focusing on committees. So there won't be any plenary session this week. So then we had to revise our program and then in time of starting the meeting. But that was communicated to all the stakeholders. That's why all of them are here, except those that will be making presentations in the afternoon. They have asked to be allowed to come in when they are due to make their presentations. The Department of Economic Development, I indicated when we opened the meeting that Ms. Mvoko had indicated that we will not be able to be part of this meeting. He apologized for that, as he's engaged also in these processes post the elections. So we have tabled his apology. Perhaps some of the issues then, as you were indicating, that the department is going to table the annual report in the portfolio committee maybe some of the issues then can be ventilated at that level. But I'll allow ECDC just to respond to those direct, because we're also interested. They made a presentation, Honorable Ndamase, and some of the documents that you're referring to, they have indicated in their presentation that they draw their mandate from including the PGDP, the Provincial Industrial Development Strategy, and also from the policy statement and budget speeches of the MEC, of Economic Development, Environmental Affairs, and Tourism, DDIT. So they've already mentioned in their opening address that their mandate is derived from these policies and strategies. Don't know if you want to add ECDC. I don't see the CEO anymore now. Is he here? Oh, okay.
Is he here, Chair?
All right. If you can perhaps respond, CEO.
Chair, we still committed to industrial development. I'm glad you highlighted our preamble in the presentation. I think work that we're doing in the priority sectors, manufacturing, automotive, agro-processing, creative industries, etc., is part of our commitment in this development.
My apologies, Chair. Can I see the face of the CEO?
Okay.
Let me work on it, Chair. It's a handsome fellow.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Can I switch it off again, Chair?
Yeah,
I'm fine. Okay. I'm fine. I'm seeing the handsome face now.
Yeah,
that's the Ntinga face. That one.
Oh, indeed. Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, sir. I just wanna quickly sort that out. Yeah. So Chair. Yes. The work includes, Chair, the interventions relating to the revitalization of the industrial centers. But I must concede, Chair, that the resource constraints have hampered this unit of work. I must concede that we have not progressed as we wish to have, and that there have been gaps, and there's a lot that could have happened in the past that didn't happen according to the plans. But the engagement we're having with DDIT as well as with Provincial Treasury regarding the whole issues of finance, of funding and recapitalization of the organization should make a big difference in empowering the organization to do better in this area. Hey, I must also indicate that part of the renewal program interventions of the organization includes risk capital and project development. This is work that had stopped, I think, in about 3 or so years. We used to do this unit of work as the organization a while ago, but for various reasons, including resource constraints, that unit of work had stopped. We're resuscitating that unit of work. So the short answer is yes, we're willing to, walk, call it uncharted territories. We're willing to be involved in exploring development initiatives that may not, result in the recoupment of our investment in order to explore possibilities and opportunities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I take it that further questions and clarities will be entertained in the portfolio committee when the chairperson invites ECDC and the department. Maybe I should have also clarified in the beginning of the meeting that I was once one of the directors of ECDC. Ironically, I went there to be introduced to the other directors by CEO of the BCMDA, CEO Bulumko Nelane, together with the then MEC of Economic Development, Honorable MC Jonas. I just wanted to indicate that. I think at this stage now, we done with the three presentations. I was asking before then, Honorable Damase came in, whether other members have follow-up questions on the three presentation. And I also see that the Secretariat has given me the responsibility of being a co-host and admitting people, if they can take that responsibility of being admitting people without even checking whether they're supposed to be in the meeting or not. So can the host and the other staff members do that, please? Are there any follow-up questions, honorable members? Not. As I was indicating, that we still have a presentation from DTIC, PRASA, and Transnet. BCM, if there are issues that you would like to hear, though you won't be able to interact with the presentations, but if you can just say, if you like to stay on and hear what the ministers, I think you mentioned the issue of the road from the NU12 area right to NU15, that monies were taken away. Those are the questions that we'll also be asking to the Minister of Transport, will be joining us this afternoon. I see some of the staff from this office, and also the CEO of PRASA has also joined, though Sandra was not invited. So I don't know if that would be under the authority of PRASA, but the minister hopefully will be here to respond to some of these questions. Can at this stage then allow the deputy minister to make an overview, and then we break, say, for 10 minutes, and then whoever she will be delegating then to continue with the presentation. I don't want to delay her because I heard that she's also got another engagement. She just make the overview and then indicate to us, then we'll be dealing with the presentation, and then we deal with the presentation after a 10 minutes break. Thank you. Welcome, Honorable DM.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me greet the meeting. Greetings to all the honorable members that are here and the entities, various departments, the delegations that are here, and also the delegation from DTIC. I will also request, Chairperson, Honorable Damase, though he was a little bit unfair, Chairperson, to request to see the face CEO without him showing his face. But as the meeting progresses, hopefully he is going to show us his handsome face too. Chairperson. No, thank you very much.
We'll at some stage we'll allow him to do so on a
okay. Okay. Chairperson, I will also switch off my video, but let me thank this opportunity that we have given us as DTIC to come and present to you our strategic role that we are playing in the Eastern Cape when it comes to the issues of building the economy of the Eastern Cape, making sure that how do we face the challenges that we are faced with of high levels of unemployment, poverty, and so forth, and the role that we are playing, that the manner that we are working well with the province of the Eastern Cape, the three spheres of our government, where province and the local municipalities we work on, really, it's one thing that we need to appreciate a lot. And also looking at the relative performance that the Eastern Cape is having when it comes to various sectors like transport equipment, the green economy, it's one thing that we need to acknowledge and commend a government of the Eastern Cape in doing relatively well when it comes to that. We are just from the COVID-19 period, the lockdown period, Chair, but we have seen, looking at those sectors, how they've buffered the economy as the Eastern Cape, and really we are saying the economic structures that are there in the province are making sure really that the sustainability and the resistance that we are seeing in that province, it's one thing that needs to be commended. And for me, looking at growing the economy, we're looking at the issues of manufacturing. How are we industrializing the province as such? We are seeing a lot of investors being attracted to come and invest in the province of the Eastern Cape. The critical role that is being played by the assets that we are having in the Eastern Cape, really, they show better resilience, and more investors are being attracted towards that province. One day, I know, Chair, we'll have even an opportunity where we can even have a broader look at all the assets that we are having in the country and see, as I'm saying, the critical role that these assets are playing, of which we're seeing in the Eastern Cape. At a moment, Eastern Cape, really, when we look at the investment terms, how they are performing very well. They're accounting to about 32% of the total South African investment. So we always say we are relying as a country as such on the role that the Eastern Cape is playing. So we are looking forward even in making sure that when we talk to the issues of industrialization, as I'm saying, looking at the the sector master plans that we're having. It's one other critical area where we're saying, what is it that the province is doing in various sectors that we are having, clothing, textile, steel, and so forth. In all these sectors, there is a very important role that we are seeing, of which, as we are going to be going through the presentation, we are going to be zooming in some of those areas as DGIC and say, what is it and how best we can even work more with Eastern Cape moving forward and making sure that we expand and we make sure that we open up opportunities for so many other role players to play in those sectors for us to grow the economy of the province. Right now, we are seeing the good relations that we are having with the province and the municipalities. And I hope it's another thing that we are going to be looking at, as to say, as we continue, as we are looking even at the extension of the East London IDZ, we're still going to be getting that good working relation. I know if I can talk, it can take almost the whole day, where in some of the areas we get so much frustrated when it comes to the level of municipalities, where we want to get in and work together, but the frustration that one can get in other areas, of which it's not something that you are experiencing with that province. So really, I would love to comment on that. And as we are setting up even the SCZ in the Wild Coast, that is exactly the relationship that I believe we are going to be continuing to work with the government as the Eastern Cape, for us to have more opportunities for our people and make sure that people do benefit and they play their role in growing the economy. Chairperson, allow me to apologize for my minister, Minister Patel. He's held up. He couldn't make it to this meeting, but we have got his full support and the delegation that I'm just about to introduce to the meeting, and also ODM Majola, who was also very much willing to be part of these discussions and just to hear what are other plans that are the province is coming up with all the entities when it comes to the growth of the economy of the Eastern Cape. But as the team will be here and we are going to be going back to share with them as to say what were the discussions as we are here. Chair, I'm with a delegation that will, the presentation will be held by Mr. Hannibal, who is our chief economist. He's the one that is going to be leading the presentation coming from DTIC. I also have Mr. Jacob Maputa, the acting DDG on spatial, industrial and economic transformation. I'm not sure, Chair, whether it will be proper as I introduce them, just to show their faces so that as they come in and even when they here to respond to the question, it will be a little bit better. Mr. Hannibal, can you show your face, please?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Hannibal, where are you?
Yeah, we can see him.
Okay, okay, thank you. I've got Mr. Jacob Maputa, the acting DDG, Spatial Industrial and Economic Transformation. Jacob, where are you? Okay.
I'm here.
Also,
here.
Oh, okay. And Mr. Mawado Malefane, Chief Director, are you here?
Thanks very much. I'm here, DM.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mike. Thank you. I also have Tammy Klassen, the Chief Director also in the Special Industrial and Economic Transformation. Tammy, are you here?
Good afternoon, DM. I'm also here. Sorry, limitation of connectivity where I am.
Okay, thank you so much.
And the director in SZ. Thank you.
And the director in SZ, yes. Then I've got Ms. Pundu from the head of the of my office, who is also part of the delegation. I'm not sure if there is anyone from DTIC that I've left, but this is the team Mr. Hannibal will be leading on the presentation, and the whole team will be taking up the question and responding and the discussion moving forward. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Honorable DM, very much for your opening remarks and the introduction of the delegation. At this stage, as I indicated earlier, that we're going to break for 10 minutes. It's half past one now. Half past one. Can we then come back at 22:02? Just to stretch Alex and come back. And then Mr. Hannibal will then continue with the presentation. And thank you very much. We can stay on block. So that then at 22, we can just go on with the meeting. I'm also on until 1500 hours. The load shedding started at 12. I see I'm also running out of battery. I'll have to change the devices again. Yeah, let's meet again at 22:02. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Good afternoon again, honorable members, officials from departments and entities, honorable DM. Can we ask then Mr. Hannibal to flight the presentation and take us through?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to you and the Honorable Members, the representatives of the entities, other departments. Honorable Chair, with your permission, I'm going to switch off my camera just to save on the bandwidth. And I'll put the presentation in a slideshow. I hope it's visible to everyone. So, Honourable Chair, firstly, thank you very much for inviting the DTIC to be part of today's session. Most of the colleagues from DTIC have been introduced already. I just want to introduce Boichoko Tsiri, who works in the economic
research
branch
with
me, and who has also been a key contributor to the presentation. Honourable Members, we're going to go through just a little bit of economic context, the Economic Reconstruction Recovery Plan, and really trying to focus at a national level and a policy level, and then pulling out some highlights at a sectoral and spatial level. So in terms of the context, as everybody knows, the recovery in the global economy is now underpinned by a reasonably good growth in China. In general, we've had quite a strong recovery after the COVID pandemic. And of course, for South Africa, the key thing has been that the commodity prices have been exceptionally strong up to now. And that's really supported GDP growth and also our trade balance quite significantly. In terms of at the national level, Of course, we've had a rebasing of the economic data by Statistics South Africa, and effectively the economy is now around about 11% larger than we believed it was previously. So that's about a 5.5 trillion rand economy in South Africa. There's been the export boom that I've alluded to already, but of course we're not out of the woods yet, and we need to manage some of the risks. There's always a chance that the pandemic will re-emerge with different or new variants, and so we do need to be a little bit cautious. In terms of the Eastern Cape, as the Deputy Minister was indicating, the structure of the provincial economy is really what has helped the Eastern Cape come through the recession last year, much stronger than a number of other provinces. And we'll go into a little bit more detail on that on this slide. So, of course, we know the population numbers. We know that we saw a significant number of jobs being lost in the course of last year in the Eastern Cape. But I think the key thing that we think is really important is that if you look at the contraction that we had last year, at national level, it was a contraction of about 7%. And for the Eastern Cape, the contraction was only about 5%. And again, the structure of the Eastern Cape economy with really significant transport equipment production, substantial food processing production, really shows that the structure of the Eastern Cape province is what has helped it to get through the difficult year that we had last year. So for the Eastern Cape as a province, the contribution to total manufacturing GDP is about 8%. But if you look then at transport equipment, it's a much higher 19%. And for food processing, again, it's a much higher 14%. And you can imagine that in the Sarah Bartman district, for example, where you've got all the citrus farming and citrus exports, this all contributes to quite a strong food processing performance. So then just a few highlights, honorable members. You've got in the top half of the slide the launch of the new C-Class, attended by Minister Patel. And again, this is a reflection of the master plans, the auto master plan, which really lays out a policy framework for South Africa, for this particular sector, approved by all the stakeholders, business, government, all three spheres, as well as organized labor, that says this is the path, this is the railway line that we're following to get to a much bigger auto sector in 10 years' time, and hopefully an auto sector that has a much larger contribution to transformation as well. And we'll come back to that issue a little bit later on, because of course we have some interventions such as the Auto Industry Transformation Fund, which is already beginning to bear fruit. In the bottom half of the slide is just the picture of the Aspen plant in Kubeha. This is where the J&J vaccine is being produced. And again, you know, we think this is a really important initiative around making sure that as South Africa, we're not vulnerable to the changes, the disruptions to global supply chains, that when the pandemic hit last year, we were all a bit worried about it. Would we have sufficient pharmaceuticals in the country? Would we have sufficient personal protective equipment in the country? So then moving more specifically to the Economic Reconstruction Recovery Plan, there are obviously a number of components to it, and DTIC plays a role in a number of them. But the critical one, the primary one from our perspective, is really around strategic localization, industrialization, and export promotion. Some of the other areas like infrastructure investment, the green economy, and gender equality and economic inclusion, we play a role in as well. But in many cases, the levers that we use for strategic localization and industrialization will have an impact in those areas as well. So we'll focus primarily on the localization and industrialization theme. But as I say, we do play a role in some of the other areas. So Honorable Chair, in terms of localization, we just want to make the point on this slide, and it's a slide that often gets us into trouble with analysts, because there's always an argument around the data and what does the data actually show us. But we put it up anyway because we really think we have to begin to win this battle of ideas. This graph or map shows you the percentage of imports as a share of GDP. And you can see for South Africa, imports account for about 25% of our GDP. If you look at a number of other countries like the United States, it's about 12%. If you look at the European Union, it's about 14%. If you look at China, it's about, if you look at Russia, it's about 15%. China, about 14%. And even some of our key developing country partners like India, it's 16%. And so the argument for us, at least, is that you can't have substantial economic growth and employment creation that's driven by industrialization if you have imports accounting for such a significantly large and such a unusually high percentage of your GDP. And so we think we have to swing the needle in a sense a little bit back from the idea that we can depend on imports to drive economic growth in South Africa. Yes, we do need imports of oil, we need imports of machinery, capital equipment, but we have to as a nation start looking at how we begin to produce those capital equipment, those consumer products that large numbers of our people are buying locally instead of importing it. So in terms of the overall approach to localization, as honorable members will know, NEDLAC did substantial work. There was a substantial and quite intensive negotiation around the localization approach. And it's important that we signal here, it's not localization just to protect the local market. It's also localization so that we can expand our access to export markets. In many cases, the products that we are increasingly producing locally can actually be exported at least to the African continent, but often to other developed markets across the globe. So these are some of the commitments that were made. The social partners at NEDLAC agreed that we would drive a localization strategy that tries to localize around about 200 billion rands worth of imports over 5 years. There are 42 products in a variety of value chains that have been prioritized. It's not an exhaustive list, but this is the initial priority list. And it covers sectors like, in some cases, quite obvious sectors like agro-processing. We have to be supporting our poultry sector, and the poultry master plan does that. The sugar sector, the sugar master plan does that. Healthcare, I've touched on that a little bit earlier around pharmaceuticals, but also the PPEs. You know, we've gone from producing just a few 100,000 masks in South Africa per month to now producing somewhere in the order of about 6 million masks per month. And that's a really substantial ramping up of capacity. It's created jobs, but it's also meant that we're not vulnerable and dependent on importers to get some of these critical products. Also basic consumer goods, things like clothing, footwear, leather goods, textiles, to a very large extent, these are things that can be made locally. They are capital intensive products. There's no good reason for us to be importing those products. Capital goods is a little bit different because in some cases they come with significant technology embedded in the particular products. But again, if we don't start localizing our capital goods now, we'll be dependent on imported capital goods for the next 50 years. And so we have to make that change. Then the last two ones are quite important, I think, for the Eastern Cape. The first one is the construction-driven value chains. And here we've got a long list. It includes, for example, cement. In the first half of this year, we had around about 500 million rands worth of cement imported. There's a cement processor in the Kuga SEZ. We want to make sure that we localize much more of the construction value chains. Similarly, on transport rolling stock, where the Eastern Cape is obviously a big player. So we've appointed, along with our partners in business and labor, CEO champions in the private sector to drive the localization work. We've also, from those sources, been able to raise around about 355 million rand, primarily for technical support. So this would be to help a firm to make sure that they can meet the standards, for example, of a big auto company, so that they can be incorporated into the auto value chain, for example. And then, of course, within the master plans, there are also significant efforts to industrialize the key sectors. Honorable members, I won't talk to this slide except to point out the third bullet there, that in 2020, our trade balance increased really substantially. We had a trade surplus and a significant trade surplus at around about 270 billion rand. And I think this is a reflection of us beginning to turn the tide on imports and beginning to be able to actually export South Africa to a much larger extent than in the last 5 years, let's say. So this is just a list of the various products. I won't go through them in detail. Just to pull out on the construction side, as you can see, cement is there, steel products, plastic piping, steel piping, earth moving equipment. Again, we want to make sure that as we have the big push, the big infrastructure build program, we don't see those economic opportunities being lost to imports. We want to make sure that the import leakages are kept to an absolute minimum. And as honorable members will be aware, the cement designation, which says that for all government spending on construction related projects, South African made cement has to be used at 100%. Local content. We think that's the first signal in the construction sector that we're really serious about localizing things like tiles, the piping, the sanitary ware, the plumbing equipment that goes into the schools, hospitals, and other buildings that are being considered through the presidency's infrastructure program. Just again to pull out here, I guess the key one for the Eastern Cape is going to be the one on the far right in terms of citrus. As I'm sure you're aware, the South African citrus sector is incredibly strong. And of course, a large portion of our citrus is exported through the production that happens in the Sundays River Valley in the Sarah Bartman district. And here you can see that we are actually second in the world in terms of citrus exports. A large portion of our exports of lemons obviously comes from the Sarah Bartman district. So then, honorable members, moving on to some of the sectoral interventions where we now try to drill down a little bit into the actual impact, what's happening on the ground. And the first area is around the automotive master plan. As I mentioned earlier, this gives us a long-term view of what it is we want to achieve in the auto sector. It's got all the social partners backing it, including government and all in all three spheres. And these are some of the outputs that we've already seen. We've got a number of investments in the Buffalo City Metro, Ebor, MA Automotive, obviously the big Mercedes-Benz announcement, and that's really the critical one that's also driving exceptionally high investment rates in the Eastern Cape, and a few others. And I think really the key thing that we'd want to point out here is that if you look at the auto scheme, we've had 38 companies approved in the Eastern Cape since 2019. The grant amount that government has provided is somewhere in the order of about 2.7 billion rand, but that has then unlocked 9.2 billion rand in investment. And so that's a really, in our view at least, but I'm hoping that honorable members will agree, that's a really substantial leverage. You know, essentially for every two rand that government puts in, 9 rand is leveraged from the private sector in investment that goes into real factories employing workers, hopefully in most cases workers from surrounding communities, although we know that we have to do much more in that area. On the right-hand side, there are just some more examples. but I won't go through those. They're well covered in a number of other presentations that we've heard this morning as well. Moving then to the steel value chain, and you'll be aware that we have a steel master plan that was launched earlier this year. Again, all stakeholders, all social partners were on board. It was really about making sure there's agreement around what we're trying to achieve here. And these are just two small examples from the Eastern Cape, Kuche Steels on the left-hand side, and then BK Steel, both of which have benefited from the Steel Master Plan and from specific funding made available by, in this case, the IDC. So Kuche Steel, a very strongly empowered and women-empowered company, and BK Steel, which is a 100% black youth-owned firm. And we're really hopeful that as the infrastructure build program really gets underway, these two firms will be able to benefit from the localization drive and will be able to supply construction material, structural steel into the infrastructure build program. So really practical examples of where localization is going to have a really positive impact. The next area is the global business services sector. Here we don't have a master plan yet, but there is some work ongoing amongst the social partners and DTIC. And as honourable members will know, this is it's more than call centres. It also includes other services that companies located in South Africa can provide to global players, global customers. So it's call centres, but it's also in some cases software development, it's remote sensing, those kinds of initiatives. And we think those are important as well. We think that there's a really significant opportunity for the Eastern Cape with a forward-looking view of, you know, where the new economic opportunities are going to come from. Here we think that this would be a really important area to look at. There are already a number of facilities in the Eastern Cape, such as in Kuche, where you've got the Telkom and Discovery call centers already located. Then moving to the green economy, and here we think there's some really exciting opportunities. Just to say up front that from our perspective, the Renewable Energy Master Plan is really about converting the existing IRP into new investment opportunities for local firms. So we're not talking about changes to the IRP. We're saying within the existing IRP framework as it stands at the moment, there's a significant push through the risk mitigation IPP program, as well as bid window 5, that's just been the preferred bidders have just been announced. We think there's a really significant opportunity to create additional jobs. Here we already have two large firms, Seraphim and ART Solar. These are big international players. There's significant opportunities for expansion, and we're really hopeful that the Renewable Energy Master Plan will cement those opportunities and help us to move from what is probably at the moment around about 65% imported solar PV panels to much closer to a 50% imported solar PV panels. And over time, as these big solar PV manufacturers begin to locate in South Africa and expand production, hopefully we can push that even higher to perhaps 60%, 70% local content in those solar panels. Also a few other examples, the Bushveld Electrolyte Company. This is a company doing catalysts and electrolyte manufacturing, estimated cost of about 312 million, relatively modest jobs at 58 jobs, but this is a fairly high-tech investment. It's a little bit capital intensive, but it opens up an entire value chain for us and for the Eastern Cape economy going forward. And so we really think it needs to be strongly supported as well. In terms of the hydrogen economy, yeah, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we just want to signal, it's early days still, as members may be aware, Minister Patel has appointed a high-level hydrogen panel to help us along with our colleagues in the Department of Science and Innovation, to navigate the opportunities that are being presented. So it's early days still, but we wanted to signal to our colleagues in the Eastern Cape that there's some significant opportunities here as well. Some of the modeling work that's been done by DSI and supported by DTIC suggests that just for South Africa to get to a 3% global green hydrogen production share. So 3% in the total global production of green hydrogen. We could be looking at around about an additional 7.9 billion rand in spending on infrastructure development and a whole range of other possibilities downstream of that really become viable, including potentially the creation of up to 37,000 jobs in the sector in a number of years. So we have to be quite cautious about the opportunities. We don't want to oversell the employment and GDP opportunities that are available, but we do want to signal that this is something that certainly national government is looking at. We would suggest that Eastern Cape and provincial government and local government be keeping quite a close eye on as well. Moving then to the healthcare and pharmaceutical sector, here again we've got a couple of examples that we wanted to put on the table. Of course, the Aspen 3.3 billion rand investment that will be completed next year. You've got a small investment of 1.4 million, but quite an important investment in that it's 100% women owned, and it's been able to secure a tender in the Eastern Cape to supply sanitary pads. And of course, you've got Germilatex, which is a condom manufacturer located in the East London IDZ. These are some of the examples of where the DTIC family, in this case, including the National Empowerment Fund, has been able to get funds, get grant and loan funding to entrepreneurs in the province and have assisted them to grow their businesses. Honorable Chair, this is a bit of a busy slide. The top part of it, where it says SMMEs, is really around the contribution of DTIC, the Industrial Development Corporation, and the NEF to SMME development in South Africa.
Of infrastructure and destruction of infrastructure, which means that our people are not looking after what are essentially national assets that they actually have. So the Transnet strategy broadly is to take the current capabilities and make sure that they do them well, and there's still some way to go in that sense. Secondly, as you will see, they've changed their approach to key customer segments that they actually have to deal with. But even within those segments, the operational levels have to be significantly improved. And then thirdly, begin to look at investments that will take us into the future at the different ports, at the different rail corridors, and to ensure that projects like Road to Rail, for example, actually succeed more than they have up to this particular point in time. So, Chair, with those introductory remarks, which were fairly long, I admit, can we rush through the presentation by the DG and then take the Transnet presentation? I have a study group at 5, so I might have to leave you at about that time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the opening remarks. Over to you, DG.
Yeah, well, good afternoon, Chair, and thank you very much for having us on here. If I can just put up the presentation. Start one there. And thank you to the minister for those opening remarks. Chair, just I hope everyone can see my screen. Chair, the minister has covered quite a bit, and thank you, minister, for that. I'm just going to pick a couple of slides as I go on, which I think are important in just highlighting the role our SOEs are playing in the Eastern Cape. And the Transnet slides, I'm going to pass very quickly through them. And if I can ask the members to regard those slides as supplementing the presentation that the CEO will be making after this. And I'll just spend a little bit of time just speaking to the agreement that we have struck with the Eastern Cape government focusing on skills development. The Chair, on aviation, I just want to speak to this slide here. As Minister has said, SAA has restarted operations and the Eastern Cape is one of its key markets going forward. Currently, it's flowing the Johannesburg Cape Town route. Durban should be resuming fairly soon. And we also have, in terms of the Eastern Cape, focus on East London, Port Elizabeth, and Mtata. And as is indicated there, is that the Mtata is mainly a low-cost route. And from what we have seen in the past, is that when state-owned aircraft are not on these thin routes, the price of flying goes through the roof. So in order to ensure that flying continues to be affordable for our people, it's important that we move into that space. There's also a focus on ensuring your leisure customers would normally make their way to places like Port Elizabeth are catered for. And of course, as it's indicated, the intention by SAA is to start operation to Port Elizabeth by 2022-2023. Minister, spoken to experts, I'll pass that, Chair. These slides speak to ESCOM. And and on this slide here, we're just showing the overview of ESCOM's business in the Eastern Cape. It indicates on the generation side the small hydros that are operated there, as well as the peaking plants. And what is also given there is a transmission business. A physical infrastructure that is in the province, the distribution of the distribution business major customers. As you can see, we have various residential customers are some of the bigger components. We have commercial and redistributors also in the mix. So that's and redistributors are one of those obviously the municipalities who are customers of the whole business of ESCOM will feature in there. Chair, I will not spend time on this. It's just an overview of the staff complement and the various operations of ESCOM in the province. Chair, this is an indication of investment plans for the Eastern Cape by ESCOM. The picking plans, there is those two plans that are intended to be built at Portrax and Dedisa. 171 megawatts and 372 megawatts respectively, and also the wind and solar projects are in the pipeline to the tune of 1,500 megawatts. So that makes about 2,000 megawatts that's planned for the area. And of course, the transmission network, in order to integrate with new generations, will be an important investment going forward. And ESCOM is saying in their drive to ensure a reliable supply system, they will be putting energies and money in ensuring that the network is strengthened going forward. So this is on the transmission side, some of the projects that are envisaged. I'm not going to spend time on them. The list is very much self-explanatory. On this slide here, we are showing where the growth for the transmission business will come from. And as you can see, for the Eastern Cape, that business, future business, 300 megawatts, smelters, I envisage there manufacturing, robotics, and the ports work, which Transnet, I'm sure, have a bit to say about it, as well as transport. And we think that they should be really in that particular mix. And I'll pass through these challenges showing the various locations of the various IP projects. Apologies, there's some animation on here. And on, this is the other slideshow that we just paused a bit on it. And this is speaking to the indebtedness of the province that Minister has touched on. As you can see, the total amount owed to Eskom is 2 billion rands from the province. At the bottom, it should be commended for having kept its account current there. So there is a municipality that could be learned from. And these are some of the actions that have been taken by Eskom to try and resolve the disputes with some of these municipalities and using the intergovernmental dispute resolution framework. COGTA has been brought into the picture. But this can be seen. And the level of response can certainly improve from government. Now, in order to help resolve this issue, Chair, what Eskom Distribution is asking for is, we ask, as your members go back into the province, to please highlight these issues. Debt management, very important, keeping the current account on time in terms of payments, and obviously making arrangements for those outstanding debts from previous periods is important. We have to use the free basic electricity that is available to help out indigenous communities. So proper list management should be put in place, and municipalities should be scrutinized as to whether they are availing this to community members who are in need of this sort of support. Legal connections, ghost vending, theft and vandalism of infrastructure continues to be a major problem across the country, Chair. So assistance in this regard will be very much appreciated. Awareness to our people in terms of proper ways of using electricity and not tampering with these high voltage installations, to ensure their own safety. And of course, ensuring that they act as an extra pair of eyes for Eskom in protecting this critical national infrastructure. These are the projects that are budgeted for in the province by the distribution business. It's about 660 million rands, 234 will be going towards refurbishment of existing infrastructure, and 386 million is intended for strengthening the infrastructure. What we have here is that we have an extra billion rands that could go towards the payment of, or rather towards the refurbishment of lines and strength, and 950 million. These are the areas that need a little bit of work from Eskom going forward. But in time, we are hoping that the commitment from distribution will improve accordingly. There was a request to cover Buffalo City a bit. That's what has been included here. There are 13 points of delivery. The metro uses about 33 mega voltage amps of electricity. Revenue is around 1.5 billion rands. And what we are getting from Eskom is that there is a good working relationship with the municipality, and that there's alignment, for instance, with one of the major industrial players in the area, Mercedes-Benz. And those are the drivers that they have cited as, from Eskom in terms of a future economic development. And that's the consumption cycle as well, revenue cycle for the areas. You can see that the peak period of usage is between June and September every year. Chair, we have also added slides, but I'm not going to spend time on them, on both on the CSI work that has been done in the area. We'll spend a bit of time on the skills development areas later on. And these are some of the key the CSI initiatives that, that have been undertaken in the province by ESCOM. And these are just some of the expenditure that has been committed into the province over 5 years. Chair, this is just shows the in total what has been put in. It amounts to about 102 million rands that has gone in. It's about 77,000 people that have benefited from that investment. And you can see that about 10 million rands has gone towards developing SME capacity. And also there's 51 organizations that have been benefited from this investment. Yeah, and 65 million rands has gone through to philanthropy and welfare. And this is just to give you some of the sorry, Chair. So this is just to give you a sense of what ESCOM is looking at as it is position itself in this particular province in terms of what would be the key areas of investment going forward. Let me pass through that, Chair, that some of the organizations that have benefited from the work in the province. As I said, on Transnet, we'll use these slides as additional supplementing the work that Transnet will be presenting now. And this just gives the operations in the province and shows the number of people that are employed. This just shows the operations in the province as operated by Transnet. And these are some of the investments that are planned for the province, including the corridor from Pretoria all the way to Kavacha for the automotive industry. Chair, these are some of the investments planned. And of course, there's some of the work on the branch lines that Transnet will be focusing on. The Cookhouse-Blaney line is a gauge for tourism opportunities, Keko de Ado and Tata to Amabele. And also there's an increasing freight connectivity. There's work that's been done on the port expansion side and the promotive side. There's with the city bands, the BMW, of course, tourism and leisure. We have covered that as well as on agriculture fund, including installation of the grain elevator. Chair, I'm going to pass through these. These are the CSI work that's been done in the province. Chair, in relation to the work that we are doing ourselves in the province, Chair, we have entered into a partnership which has enabled Transnet to assist with people with development, especially skills development for young people in this particular area, considering the great need that we all are aware of in the province. And some of the projects that are being worked on and mentioned on there, including obviously the automotive logistics hub that we've spoken to earlier, lab manufacturing, agricultural exports. We've spoken about recreation and tourism, as well as focus on the emerging miners in the area. The agreement that I'm referring to, Chair, that is just the first page of it that we have entered into to facilitate not only from Transnet, but the other SOEs in our stable. We have quite a capable a training expertise in our SOEs from DINAL, ESCOM, Transnet at the fore. Of course, we have SAFCOL that is also on the forestry front, which in the past has owned forests in the Eastern Cape. the focus now is on Mpumalanga and Limpopo, but there's no reason why they should, we should not pull in the expertise with regard to the Eastern Cape. That MOU chair was entered into in August 2021. It provides a framework for us to be able to work together. And there are SLAs with individual SOEs that are being finalized, and Transnet has been at the fore of that particular work. The intention, Chair, is for the SOEs to host an agreed number of learners in specific training areas as part of the drive to get more people to be economically active. Some of the areas of focus, obviously, in providing technical skills and getting apprentices into the system, and most importantly, to get them to be properly mentored in work environments where they can be able to attain relevant skills to supplement the theoretical training that they would have received. Trade testing, obviously, is critical in this respect, in order to ensure that we don't have kids with certificates but no trade licenses. And this work includes collaboration with TVET colleges. And the intention as well is to look at areas like work readiness and also other career-related awareness programs to ensure that increase the success of young people getting into these workplaces. And of course, as we go along, we are looking at other areas where we can collaborate. As I indicated, just because the NSOE is not present in the province does not mean that we cannot use this framework to ensure that they are assisted with training that may be required down there. Yeah, and the training that we do, we normally go beyond what the SOE requires. For instance, if a training center has a space, for instance, for 200 young people, but the entity only requires 50 people, we'll have 150 people that be surplus to requirements. So, but we still train them, and with the assistance of National Skills Fund, we're able to release them into the job market. And it has been successful, that program, in terms of just giving these young people opportunities to find jobs once they are trained. Of course, that normally does get affected by economic cycle. And we have instances where it does take some time for some of these kids to get opportunities. The good thing is that they have the skill, and with the skill, they are able to do more than just look for a job. Chair, we just thought we'd just touch a bit on the district development model and the work that we are doing in the department in supporting what has been a drive across the country. Our minister is entrusted with Tshwane, and we have our deputy minister looking after Gariep, which is on the border with the Eastern Cape. And so we are also internally sort of repurposing our intergovernmental unit to be able to help us out in terms of ensuring that we integrate the SOE investment and operational plans with to be aligned, or at least to get the integrated development plans of municipalities and the growth development plans of the provinces to align with what our SOEs are planning, so that we can get maximum impact in these areas. And we have identified, obviously, this Cape as one of the regions that we want to work closely with, and we are very much involved with the new city development. Thank you, Chair. I hope that was fast enough. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. What makes me glad is that some of the projects that you're referring to, you're confirming what has been reported to us by the Buffalo City Municipality and the Buffalo City Metropolitan Development Agency, particularly with regard to the expansion of the port of Buffalo City, and the waterfront development in the port. So I see that those projects are also in the report. Without wasting any time, let's now go to the CEO of Transnet, if she can take us through the presentation of Transnet. Over to you, CEO.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Good afternoon, Minister and DG and the colleagues who are on the call. Chair, there's some of the detailed information that was requested that would have been, I hope, in the DPE presentation. But so I'll try and mindful of the time to quickly go through the presentation of the activities that have been undertaken by Transnet in the Eastern Cape. Can you go to the next slide, please? Oh, Chair, can I just request an indication of how much time we have?
Can I give you 20 minutes?
Okay, no, that's useful. Thanks. Can you go to the next slide, please? Turn myself. Okay, so okay, I've got 20 minutes. I think this is just a reference to the role of Transnet, and so because I've got 20 minutes, I'm not going to waste time. Move on, Palisa, from the slide. So to get to what are the core challenges that Transnet faces, and I think as the Minister has indicated, we wish we would be able to say that we might be in a much, in a totally different position to what the other SOEs are in. But sadly, to some extent, there's a lot of operational issues that we have to deal with. And then unfortunately, because of the years of qualified orders as well, we find ourselves in a very tight situation when it comes to liquidity. You would have seen in the press that we were recently downgraded by Moody's. That makes life really difficult for Transnet. And so, unfortunately, we have to also take a much more strongly commercial position, because our first priority has definitely got to be the survival and sustainability of Transnet. So what are the challenges that we face? The high levels of debt and the obligations that we face. We've also seen a decline in market share that we had. And this is fundamentally not because there's no opportunities, but rather as a result of the state of disrepair in some of the basic infrastructure that we use. Also, COVID has been particularly difficult, and in particular when it comes to TPL, transit pipelines, especially the period when we had the lockdowns, which didn't allow people to travel between provinces. It meant that the demand for fuel actually went significantly down. And also the other problem is with the flying, or suppose international travel, and even domestically, when that went down, because it makes up a significant amount of transit pipelines revenues. This has had a serious dampening effect on the economy, and we can see it in terms of our own performance. We have to improve our asset utilization, and that does mean between our ability to fund the use of the asset and also our ability to use our assets to generate revenue for us by allowing others to use our assets and pay us a fee for that. Low levels of customer satisfaction, particularly in segments, and this is more as a result of our inability sometimes to move the volumes that they'd like to see us move. The declining asset condition I've already indicated. And then what has been most pernicious is the increased incidence of theft and vandalism, which is across the network. I imagine Prasa would have mentioned this. And in fact, if we were showing you a heat map, you'd be quite amazed at how extensive the cable theft and general vandalism is in South Africa. Then in the same breath, there are some serious policy shifts that have happened. We're quite well down the line towards the separation and the creation of TNPA as an independent subsidiary By the beginning of the next financial year, it will be registered as such. We've already got an interim board that has been established. And for years, though, it has been operating as an arm's length relationship to Transnet Group. But what we are working hard to do is ensure that administratively it starts to make decisions which will ensure that there's improved performance right across the port system and by other terminal operators. For Transnet, we have a net benefit in terms of asset quality and value if we had all of the terminal operators being a lot more efficient than they currently are. Open access rail network is a change that's coming. And what we've been preparing ourselves for this. And also, most importantly, I mean, I can imagine, Honourable Chair and members, if you've always been the single provider of a particular service, the arrival of new incumbents does change the playing field and the environment, and also increases the level of uncertainty inside the organization. So a lot of effort is going to ensuring that as Transnet, we all understand that there's an upside on the other side for us, and definitely can see the full utilization of the system being a core benefit for us in terms of just revenue. The introduction of the new port regulator, integrated transport regulator, we're very supportive of this and look forward to their getting operational. Because, to be honest, for Transnet, regulated businesses also have the benefit of ensuring that there's predictability. And so our ability to make investments going forward, infrastructure upgrades and expansions, is much easier off a certain income stream, mindful of the fact that we have to ensure that we do this as efficiently as we possibly can. Next slide, please. So to a large extent, what have we been doing over the last couple of months in developing a new strategy for Transnet is we've tried hard to look at a business from a different perspective so that we fundamentally ensure that we were sweating all of our assets, ensuring that we crowd in partnerships so that we are able to grow Transnet as a group. We could go on about just the extent of debt that we face, which is both that which we've generated, but also, much like Eskom, there's quite a lot of amount that we are owed by other parties as well, which creates its own challenges for us as a company. But what we're trying to do as Transnet is focus on what we're good at and do that even better. And amongst the things that we're good at, we know how to run long trains. We're great at that. We also are good at the ports in terms of moving bulk commodities. We need to do much better in terms of moving containers in particular, but we've underinvested in this area, which has created its own problems. We also, in the areas where we need help, is to look at private sector support of one sort or the other, and therefore, and also lastly, collaboration with the whole economy so that we can benefit the South African economy in general. Next slide, please. We focus on 9 commodities as a business, and this segmental view of the business has enabled us to pull the whole of Transnet together into a single interface where we would look at iron ore as a segment and then pull in the various operating divisions of Transnet as they contribute to the iron ore business. It's quite useful because it then gets everybody to understand what they need to deliver to ensure that we maximize benefit. We've done pretty well in this period in most of the commodities. The one that we actually are not meeting performance expectation is coal, and we have a special team that's looking at how we might be able to perform much better in moving the volumes of coal that the customers would like to have moved. Next slide, please. As we move on, I mean, in agri, we're working quite closely with the sector to develop a response in terms of the strategy. And fundamentally, agri, we move, it's the port, it's our port businesses that interface with agriculture. This is a very busy slide, but its core value for us at Transnet is that it's the consolidation of all of the key initiatives and transactions that we are involved in as a company in this. Next slide, please. I think move on from the slide. I mean, this is talks to our strategy. Next. I think we can move on. This just talks to our mandate. I mean, I'd like to, come closer to this one. This would be the Eastern Cape's strategic investment roadmap. So what we've tried to do is to also look at how we as Transnet might be able to continue supporting the strategy of the province, fundamentally actually looking at lowering the cost of doing business and enabling economic growth, with the core focus in our case at both East London, Buffalo City, as well as Gqeberha, as well as Nkunga port directly, and to see how in those activities we also would help enhance the activities at all of the IDZs that adjacent to where we are located. Next slide. So the four segments that we would be the focus for the Eastern Cape on our side, bearing in mind the nine that I indicated earlier, is manganese. You'd know that the industry is of the view that we could increase exports from up to 22 million tons. We're currently around 8 to 12 million tons of manganese out of South Africa. There's an opportunity going forward, and the thing that's exciting about manganese is that it is a mineral or metal of the mineral of the a resource of the future, given the EVs as they arise. Autos and containers, both Port Elizabeth as well as Nkunga, and also Buffalo City, Port of East London, being really important hubs for auto container. Auto terminals, as well as then MCT being an important transshipment hub. MCT as a transshipment hub is absolutely, and the transactions that we are undertaking are absolutely crucial. And what we are hoping we might be able to secure is a partner who will bring in back of port activities, transshipment cargoes that will enable more manufacturing at, in particular, CDC, Kuga Development Corporation. Fuel and gas, important sector for us, and in particular gas, and we are a party to the project that's been run by the Department of Mineral Resources, led by Kuga Development Corporation for a gas hub at Nkunga. You would be aware that the RFP went out recently, issued by the department or CDC on their behalf. And then agriculture, we need to do a little bit more work. As I've indicated, we've agreed with the agricultural sector. They're going to be looking at, in particular, East London, the Port of East London, to see how we might work collaboratively with them to improve the investment so that that can become an important supply chain for agriculture going forward. But it's going to be essential that we work collaboratively with them. At all of the ports, as you're aware, there are all kinds of proposals to look at waterfronts. And in the Buffalo City, we are working with the city around the waterfront, whilst we ensure that we find ways and means of ensuring that less trucks go into the city, because they are having quite a damaging effect on the road. If you come back to autos and containers, there is the volumes that we need to be able to meet in the Port of East London for Merck as they forecast growth to 185,000 units. But really there, to our mind, there's more than enough capacity to move the 185,000 units. What we have to do is improve our operations, but also improve our contracting. Too much storage happens at the port, which is a high-cost infrastructure. We need to find a solution for storage away from the port, which would ensure then that there would be more than enough capacity to accommodate the growth of Merck. We still have to take into account the issue of the channel widening so that they would be able to have bigger ro-ros coming into the port. In the case of the Port of Port Elizabeth, as you're aware, Ford has indicated a desire to evacuate their vehicles through that port. We currently don't have enough capacity, and what we are working furiously with the National Port Authority is to look at converting the container terminal into a bigger part of that to a auto terminal. It's much more efficient for South Africa in terms of an investment, and it ensures that by the time that Ford anticipates increasing their volumes through Port Elizabeth, we would be ready to move the cargoes. Now, there are definite advantages for Gqeberha with the Port of Port Elizabeth becoming the hub for autos because of the additional jobs, not just only manufacturing and all the other componentry that Ford is looking to relocate to that part of the country, but also the services, the value-added services that can be provided at the port, which create jobs, the low-skilled jobs, right enough, but also quite some seriously high-skilled jobs as Transnet port terminals, especially the autos area. We're looking at how we might be able to find a partner to help us develop this area of additional revenue for ourselves. Next slide, please. I think I've indicated this a little bit, but we've made quite... no, can you go back? I think we've made quite good progress. The plan, as you would know, is for Ford would have liked us to have the capacity available by 2025. But we have indicated to Ford that the best time that we would be able to, because remember, in our case, we have to move two sets of cargo. We have to move the vehicles from Kalfontein to the port, but we also need to be able to increase the volumes of manganese that we move to the port in both Gqeberha and Nqunqa going forward. So we need to match those capacity and expansions on the rail system. But the intention is that by 2026, we should be ready. We are talking to the DTIC. I imagine they may have indicated this, and also the rest of government, around getting additional support for expanding the rail capacity. Because unfortunately, unlike mining, autos is not going to be able to fund the expansion of the rail capacity. The mining sector is able to do that on condition we are able to phase it in a sensible fashion. Next slide, please. On manganese, as we've indicated, the idea is to have 60 million tons of manganese flow out of Nqunqa. The RFP has been issued by CDC on our behalf to identify a technology. What was a big issue for us on this one is given the issues with water availability was to find both an environmentally friendly in terms of air emissions as well as water use that would enable us to export about 60 million tons of manganese from Nqunqa. We have indicated to the municipality as well as to the provincial government that have after looking at alternative options of shutting down the manganese terminal in the port of Port Elizabeth, we have requested and really after really, really trying that we keep the manganese terminal open for the next 5 years, but have put quite a lot of pressure on CDC to move fast on the construction of on this project to construct a new terminal at Nguha for manganese. The intention is to make this a turnkey project so that we can deliver it on time and at the anticipated cost. Now, the next project, which affects the port of Port Elizabeth and therefore the development of the waterfront, is the tank farm, which was supposed to migrate out of there as well by the end of this financial year. Unfortunately, the previous project, which was to build a new tank farm in Nguha, fell through. The economics just didn't work out. But fortunately, we were able to find another project, which was quite far down the line, that CDC was responsible for. So we now have an arrangement, an agreement, because if we had insisted on shutting down the tank farm in PE, Orion Engineering, which is the company that makes the carbon black that goes into tires, would have been forced basically to shut down. So we've kept that open until such time that CDC is able to finish their project. As things currently stand, we anticipate that to be before the end of the financial year next year, which would then enable us to start fully decommissioning the tank farm in the port in of Port Elizabeth and enable the development of the waterfront. Next slide. Next slide. I don't only. So on agriculture, there's a real. Honourable Chair, I really do think that we need to do a lot more work as a company to develop the agricultural supply chain, both within the Eastern Cape and then also to link up and understand what are the flows inside the problem inside the province. There's really a lot of work that needs to be done with that. And the team under Dr. Andrew Shaw is starting to do work in this area. But also, as I've indicated, we are talking to the associations, the agricultural associations, about basically what is the infrastructure they'd like to see both in East London and in the port of Port Elizabeth to enable this to become an important region for exports and movement of agricultural production. Next slide. We have this slide just is a reflection of a few projects that we think are important branch line projects that we could drive in the province. But what is most interesting about our branch line strategy now is that we are not going to all of the branch lines that we're going to issue for concessioning. We'll make sure that they're fixed and that they're operational first, before we put them into the market so that they can operate, number one. Number two, what we are looking at is ensuring that the branch services are able to run to end destination, and end destination often being the ports themselves, which is quite a significant shift from the previous situation. But these will come out into the market as they become available and would be advertised nationally going forward. Next slide. Next slide, please. I just asked Yolisa to quickly talk through these projects. I hope she's available to talk through these. But Yolisa, we don't have much time because we must finish.
Yes, Portia, I will certainly take less than 2 minutes. Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Minister, together with the colleagues on the call. My name is Yolisa Kani. Chair, this speaks to the point that you made about a lot of investments going to the western side of the Eastern Cape as opposed to the Eastern side. Last month, we spent a good 2 days with the key stakeholders in Buffalo City. It was the municipality, the Border Car Business Chamber, the BCMDA, the East London IDZ, all of them, basically, to sort of reset the relationship and realign basically on the commitments that were made previously by Transnet and the municipality together. I suppose the whole exercise was to ensure that moving forward, that the planning is well coordinated and integrated, and that we agree on the projects that are viable and that would yield the desired outcome of economic development in Buffalo City. So, I mean, you've already spoken about and we drilled it down to these 6 projects that you see on the slide. Infrastructure, we spoke about the port expansion project. All parties were aligned in terms of cost sharing for the pre-feasibility study for this port expansion project. What the guys need to do as well is obviously look at finalizing the project scoping, because what we saw previously or what we had previously only spoke to the user needs, and there was no taking into account of socioeconomic and regional benefits. We have established a multi-stakeholder working committee that meets every month to kind of monitor the developments. Portia spoke to automotive. We do have a commitment of making sure that they do win their tender for the W207 model. However, she's spoken to speaking to them about port productivity and efficiencies vis-a-vis car terminal expansion. Those engagements are being handled by TPT. We've also spoken to internally, we're looking at the facilitation of governance processes and aligning on the deepening of NBERTH, which is dedicated to the auto sector, Mercedes-Benz in this case. There was a discussion amongst the parties about the possibility of attracting BMW to export through the Port Office London. Those discussions, when they initially started, BMW was quite keen. Market fundamentals have changed. We're not sure if that's still the case. However, as a team, we've agreed that we need to go back and look at whether this is still possible. But most importantly, we'd have to look at what kind of infrastructure improvements would be required to make this a possibility. So put a question mark on that one, Chair, until we come back with a solid business case. Tourism and leisure, we are engaging with BCMDA together with our Transnet Properties team to look at collaboration and partnership in that space, as well as expediting the expression of interest process for land parcels, strategic land parcels in Buffalo City, Point in Case, Gately, Cambridge, and the rest of them for stimulating economic development. The last point, Portia spoke quite at length about it in terms of the agri-sector. Most importantly, the team have gone back to the drawing board to look at the status of the grain elevators. Do we invest in it or in them as Transnet, or is it a case of opening them up to the private sector? Most importantly, also, ECDC is looking at demand validation linked to the industrial parks, which are basically meant to do the consolidation of grain commodities in the Eastern Cape. And that would inform the decision of the sequencing of opening our branch lines for agricultural commodities in the Eastern Cape. Chairperson, in summary, it's to say that we've realigned. We're well on course in terms of coordinating our projects down in Buffalo City. And I hope it gives you comfort that there is some work happening there that is focused at investing in Buffalo City. Thank you, Portia.
Well, actually, I was saying the western side of the Kai. That includes the Buffalo City. So when I was talking about marginalization, I'm talking about the old Transkei.
Ah, I get it. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, that's our presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, CEO. Already thank the Minister, the DG. Honorable members, now we can ask a question to all four presentations. You choose which one you want to ask question on. The city manager of Buffalo City is also here with us. He made a presentation also earlier and has confirmed some of the projects that Yolisa has been talking to. But the only issue that we promised to raise when the Minister of Transport was to be here was the issue of the road construction in the Mdansane area. Unfortunately, it is held up in another portfolio committee meeting, we are told. But we, according to the program of the Select Committee on Transport, SANRAL, will be coming to the committee that is chaired by Honorable Kenny Moimank sometime here in November. So we will raise that issue of the completion of the road in Mdansane. Honorable members, questions to any of the presentations? We had a presentation from the DTIC, followed by PRASA. Open remarks by the minister and the briefing by the DG and also briefing by the CEO of Transnet.
Honorable Foshop.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not going to switch on my video due to network problems. With regard to the DTIC, I'd like to know from them, they spoke about the Oyster Bay and the Wesley Siskai wind farms, and they stated that it would be completed in 2021. I'd like to know if this is the case and where these wind farms are and how much power will they be able to generate from them. And then he also spoke to the 50% PV panels for IPPs. Could he give me an indication on what the cost will be to procure them locally in comparison with the imported panels and what the guarantees are? And then he also spoke to a program with regard to sanitary pads. This is an excellent program, and I'd like to know if the DTIC has collaborated with the Department of Education to see how this business could accommodate schoolgirls in the Eastern Cape. And then PRASA. I have to giggle because we've just seen what's happened to the blue train. It wasn't even commuting anywhere, and it was derailed. Could they give us more information on that? And then I'd also like to speak to PRASA with regard to the Maloto rail corridor. I know we're speaking about the Eastern Cape, but the program in Mpumalanga hasn't even been completed. It's sort of pushed off the rails now, and now they're concentrating in the Eastern Cape. I understand that, but they need to give us some information with regard to the Maloto rail corridor and how that will affect the Motherwell rail link. And then a question to Honorable Gordhan. I'd like to know from him, we are all sitting in the same boat, and we cannot, as we heard earlier on before the meeting took place, that the director must be fired and the whole board must be fired. The problem with Eskom has been coming for many a years. It's not just since the director has been appointed. What I'd like to know from the minister is whether steps have been taken against officials for the persistent failure to fix the electricity crisis. Thank you very much, Chair. That's about it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Mema.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the full presentation that's received and presented by the minister, the team, and the chair of PRASA. Let me first, just get a sense from Transnet, because when the minister made a briefing, a brief opening remarks, he also alluded to the fact that Transnet also did not escape the wrath of mismanagement like other state-owned entities in the past. What I want to get from the DG is as to whether has there been a turnaround in terms of the declining operational performance that Transnet has experienced in the past. But more than that, the question is whether, given the a challenge around its balance sheet, is it able to respond positively in terms of the broader industry, on the basis of its balance sheet to make critical infrastructure investment, because for the freight system to grow, there has to be massive infrastructure investment. So and key to that is the ability and the capacity of Transnet to be able to through its balance sheet instill confidence to the investors. Secondly, also related to Transnet is what was supposed to be launched on the 7th of October, the Eastern Cape Railway Line, that to a certain extent has been dormant, understand, in the past 5 years because of the intervention by the Railway Safety Regulator. And this happened in 2018. Among the issues that was raised by the DG is the need to ensure that the ease of doing business, we are able to ensure that our partners are able to attract investors and prevent investors from going to other areas. So with the closure of this line, which happened in 2018, can we with certainty say that indeed the reopening has happened with smooth transition, because it's important that the Cookhouse Lane line, which I believe is quite critical, has to be recommissioned. And has to be rehabilitated, because with that, we are then able to ensure that a number of municipalities in the Eastern Cape are able to benefit, because this line, understand, it runs through more than 200 kilometers long, and it cut across. It goes through two district municipalities. Remote Mhlaba, Amahlathi local municipalities, Amathole, Sarbartman district municipality, and the Buffalo City Metro municipality. So it will be important just to get a sense in terms of whether rehabilitation has taken place, because that can also assist in terms of ensuring that number of areas are cheap, like I indicated. The ease of doing business and also the lowering of the cost of doing business. But more than that, ensuring that local economic development, which is a function of one of the four objectives that local government assists with, is able to discharge that. the last one is the decommissioning of the manganese terminal. The decommissioning of the manganese terminal at the PE, and with the sole purpose of relocating it to Port Noha. I just want to get a sense in terms of the process as it unfolds. What is its impact in terms of ensuring that there's no disruption, particularly with regards to our export a component of our work, because both the iron ore and the manganese mainly are exported through these terminals. So, and can we with certainty, given the fact that understand this has been implemented through Kuha Development Corporation, are we in a much more better position to exercise oversight over such bidding process to ensure that it doesn't go off the rail? Because I think the issue of the of the mismanagement of the supply chain management process has also been a challenge, and it can derail and delay a key critical infrastructure program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Muima. Are there any other members who would like to ask questions? I don't see any other hands. Just there is some question also from myself. Just on the issue of the issue that I was raising, I think I must re-emphasize it, because I anticipated that it's going to be a challenge again for both, in fact, for all three, even DTIC, the marginalization of the, let me call it now, all Transkei, not say West and Eastern South, because it's confusing. The role of DTIC, BRASA, and Transnet with regard to the old Transkei, because there's really a very little that is taking place in that area in terms of economic development. And I speak under correction that this is the most populous area in the province. It rely only on the government remittances. And also those that are employed in the public service, teachers and nurses. There are just no factories because there's no industrialization taking place in the area. I note DTIC is talking about the Wild Coast IDZ, which will be preceded by the industrial park, and we have experiences with the industrial park, as we mentioned earlier, that the industrial park, just the one in the in Dimbaza, others in the Krisani region, they have phases, very slow phases that can take to 2 years just to fence and put up a high mast lighting and security gate, 2 years just to do that without having the top structure inside those sites. So I'm worried about even the industrial park that is muted for the old Transkei, the Wild Coast area. But I would like a response in all three as to what plans does Transnet have in terms of its footprint in the old Transkei area, BRASA, as well as DTIC. So if I could get a response with regard to those three areas. But I just also want to find out from BRASA, given now that the Transnet has opened the railway line, say between East London and the Qeberha, that isn't this then an opportunity to ensure that you have trains that run between East London and Alice, for example, where there's a Fort Hare University that could then ferry student between East London, because it's got a branch here in East London. The main campus is in Alice. Whether this is not an opportunity to assist them, the student, but also the other opportunity, whether you should not also open a station just next to the Walter Sisulu University for those students at that particular university as well to assist them. So I just want to see if that should not also be the opportunity. And in previous meeting with PRASA, we've raised the challenges of signals between East London and Berlin. And the complaint from the Department of Transport was that those lines are the responsibility of Transnet. It is a duty of Transnet to put up the signals, because without these signals, the number of accidents that are taking place as a result of the lack of signaling in those areas. I just want to know that now that there's this line that has been opened, the challenges of signaling have been addressed. Perhaps also with regard to the other opportunity, given that there is going to be this industrial park in Dimbaza, whether we should not be considering as PRASA to also open a station in Dimbaza for the community of Dimbaza that will be moving between, say, Ikone and Dimbaza. Also, maybe with regard to Transnet, because you've indicated that you will be having a role in the N2 Wild Coast, the new city there. If you can perhaps elaborate what kind of role that you will play in that particular area. To Eskom, the problem with the debt that is not being paid by the municipality, I think one municipality, Eric Mkichim, owes about close to $1 billion. My question, it's always been a question I've been asking, even when COGTA would visit the plenary sessions of NCOP, as to why can't then Eskom sell electricity directly to the consumers and take away this markup, because it's no longer just a markup. The municipality are taking the whole amount. I know you're saying that when you're reporting DG that there are some legal processes that are taking place, but why can't we just do this once and for all? Sell. I know perhaps the city manager of Buffalo City is here, may not agree with me, because they are benefiting as municipality from this markup. And I see that BCM is not mentioned as one of those municipality that owe Eskom. The issue of the challenges of the Eskom and Transnet with regard to the disciplinary matters, if you can be told what action is it being taken against those who are on the wrong side of the law. Because we don't really hear exactly what is happening with regard to, we'll find one or two people that there's a report that they've been arrested for stealing fuel, but that would be just one or two those kinds of reported incident. We would like perhaps to find out more. I know that the department does not report to this committee. It is reporting for now because we've invited these departments to tell us their footprint in the province of the Eastern Cape, as they will be doing the same with regard to all other provinces. Perhaps the committee that is responsible, that DPE reports to and Transnet reports to and Eskom reports to, maybe they may be knowing it, to what extent a disciplinary action taken against those who are found to have transgressed the rules and the regulations and the law. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry, the last point I wanted to ask, I think Yolisa, maybe this goes to you. The issue of the land parcel, maybe the BCM can also respond. There's a theater in East London called Orient Theater. It's a very old theater where It's also used for boxing matches, boxing matches. But the standard of that the theater, I know that even meetings, community meetings will take place, then music shows before COVID. But when we ask from the councillors why it is not being developed, the argument was that it is on the land that is owned by Transnet. I hear you were talking about the land parcels that you are in discussion with the BCM about. I want to check whether this Orient Theatre forms part of those land parcels. The last point I wanted to emphasize, I think for the DPE as well as Transnet, that we should avoid by all means that there should be no competition, unfair competition with regard to the investments between East London or Buffalo City and the Nelson Mandela Metro. It should not be found at the center of that unfair competition between this metropolitan municipality over the investment, where we decide which metro must have these or other projects. Thank you very much.
Just a follow-up before you give over to the team to respond, Honourable Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, just on the to get clarity from Transnet, I remember that with the implementation of the CIP3 was talking to the Southeastern Node and Corridor Development, and one of the objectives was to strengthen economic development in Port Elizabeth through a manganese rail capacity from Northern Bay. So I'm more interested to get a sense in terms of what does that mean to this economic development in PE? Does it mean that the objective has changed? What happens now to the manganese rail capacity that was envisaged to be developed? And linked to that also is the, because we seldom have the benefit of having Transnet with us, the issue of the Saldanha Northern Cape Development Corridor. They might not respond now. They can do it in future. I mean, probably through a written response, but I think it will be important just to get a sense in terms of how far is that program of the Saldanha Northern Cape Development Corridor. But beyond that, access of the emerging manganese and iron ore players to this rail line has been a challenge, particularly across these mining corridors. What is the role that the DPE and Transnet is playing in terms of ensuring that a monopoly and dominance of the bigger players in this space is not frustrating our broader transformation agenda in terms of transforming this sectors, because with the emergence of this mining black mining players, the access to the rail has always been a challenge. Hence, most of our roads are damaged by this by the trucks that are transporting both iron ore and also manganese from some of our provinces. And you know that both PRASA and also the Department of Transport have made a commitment to transfer the to transport and to ship these products from road to rail. And lastly, the also linked to the point that was raised in the presentation by Transnet, the original equipment manufacturers can we with confidence say as DPE and also and Transnet that transformation is happening, because this is another area of monopoly by few dominant players with regard to our programs of development around rail, so that at least we also demonopolizes these sectors. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Moima. Perhaps it also reminded me that the CEO of Transnet was talking about ensuring the full capacity of the port of Mocha, that it should be, I think, automotive-focused port. I just want to then to find out with regard to, for example, Buffalo City, the expansion of the port in Buffalo City to accommodate the auto sector, particularly Mercedes-Benz of South Africa. What does that mean? Does it mean, therefore, the cars must move from East London using the railway line to Port of Mocha? If I can get clarity on that. But what I also wanted to just to clarify is that I'm not from the old Transkei. I don't want to be viewed that the chair is abusing his position by pushing for investment to the Transkei, because there could be assumption that I'm from the Transkei. I'm not from the Transkei. I'm from the Buffalo City Metropolitan Municipality. But I'm concerned that that area, the old Transkei, is being marginalized when it comes to the economic development of the province. So I just wanted to clarify that aspect, because others may think that I'm lobbying for the